Hi, this is Christopher Perrin with Inside Classical Education. On this podcast program, I interview a variety of leaders, administrators, and educators on topics relating to classical Christian education and its ongoing recovery and renewal in the 21st century. Archives of previous interviews can be found at our blog and podcast site at www.insideclassicaled.com. This is Christopher Perrin. We're here talking with Ken Myers. Ken, you referred to a Gnosticizing Christianity. If that's what we want to avoid, what might you describe as that which we're seeking? What words would you use to describe that which we're after?
Sometimes you just use the phrase, you know, Christocentric humanism. Mm-hmm. That is that it's humanism in the sense that we take seriously all aspects of our humanity. Mm-hmm. and that we learn about the kinds of creatures we are. We learn about the meaning of our humanity mm-hmm. through the person of Christ. Mm-hmm. But I think, yeah, I mean, the phrase incarnational sometimes I use to, again, stress what the incarnation itself stresses, that God comes into the world so that the divine power is not lost because of its engagement with mm-hmm. with creation. Mm-hmm. I mean, that would be one way. That would be another way. I don't know if I've used exactly a phrase, mm-hmm. but I often, Christian humanism or Christocentric mm-hmm. humanism is a phrase I've used most. Mm-hmm. And one way, I came up with that formulation years ago. I remember thinking that one of the characteristics of bad culture is that it tends to be dehumanizing. Mm-hmm. Now, Gnosticism is one way to be dehumanizing because it denies the goodness of the body. Mm-hmm. There are other ways to be dehumanizing as well. which have more to do with denial of aspects of things beyond our own being. But
this reminds me of a connection to classical Christian education, Ken, because a number of people in the classical Christian renewal have been thinking about education in a profound sense being guided by our view of what the human is. In other words, there's an anthropological starting point as well as a Christocentric starting point.
Right.
And that perhaps the liberal arts are really rooted in creation. We're seeking to cultivate humanity by grammar, logic, and rhetoric, for example, which is a cultivation of language. So I'm wondering if... and then there's this quotation by Irenaeus that has been circulating, that the glory of God is a human being fully alive.
Yes.
And that part of, therefore, what we're trying to do as educators is to help form a human being, help
right.
shape and grow.
Right,
a human
right,
being.
Right.
Now, I think this connects, this is certainly a question that classical Christian educators are dealing with, and it relates very much to your ongoing emphasis with the shaping of a human soul. Could you comment on your own interest in the shape the soul takes and how it is shaped, and maybe how that could be connected to education as the formation of a soul?
Yeah. I guess that the formation of the soul begins with the formation of desire, that what education really is. I was rereading *Abolition of Man* this past week, actually, and I'm actually getting ready to give a lecture on education later this week, and the idea that we are trained first of all. To love what we should love. That's very unmodern. That's very unpopular today. I'm very interested in music and got interested in broader cultural issues principally because of my involvement with music as a young person. And I've been thinking a lot in the last 6 months or so about how unimaginable it would be for most people to be told that they need to be taught what music they should like. that's almost the most most offensive thing you could possibly say. And yet it's interesting that the idea of a well-ordered soul, the word musical as I understand it, or the idea of harmony, is used in both classical and Christian sources to talk about the well-ordered soul. A musical person wasn't somebody who could play an instrument or sing, but a musical person is a person whose soul was harmonious in some way, someone whose inner life was ordered appropriately. So I think that that's I guess I'd say the first and most important thing is that we learn to love what we should love, and that takes very specific and diverse kinds of forms.
And could I interject that that's very different from a teacher in front of a whiteboard communicating information?
Yeah, and I think that the modern idea of knowledge, which is pretty much the same as information, that doesn't involve the orientation of desires. It doesn't leave room really for imagination. That's a new thing. That, you know, in fact, I've thought about this, you know, that Romans 12:1-2 are a passage I've used thousands of times probably in defending the idea of a Christian worldview or defend the idea of Christian thinking. And only recently did I realize when Paul talks about the renewing of your mind, he probably had something a lot fuller and richer involved than we do. We think the renewing of your mind, we think that means the renewing of something that's basically a mental processing capacity with a set of ideas. But mind for Paul, as for his contemporaries, meant something a lot richer than that. It meant something that really did involve the affections and not just the capacity for rational analysis. So I do think that that's, I do think that education and the formation of the soul seem to me to be so almost synonymous that rightly understood, they should not be seen as so distinct. I think you see this in Augustine. You see that the idea that first of all, he talks about believing in order to know. So there's a sense in which we already are oriented to want to love the truth. It reminds me of one of the Psalms, I can't remember where David talks about, "Oh, how I love thy law." Mm-hmm. So not only is there a love, there's a love of not just of truth, but a love of obedience that's implicit there. And those things are all intertwined in a pre-modern view. We separate them all out. So we have rationality and we have emotions and we have will, and all these things are all separate in ways that they're not. And embodiment. I'm getting ready for some Christmas music in my choir now, and there's a line we're singing in: "The knees of my heart shall I bow." A great phrase that the heart has knees, so there's a interaction between how our bodies behave and what our affection is and what we understand things to be.
Ken Myers of Mars Hill Audio on the formation and cultivation of the soul. This is Christopher Perrin for Inside Classical Education, which can be found on the web at insideclassicaled.com.